The headlines. Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei, in a message on Hajj pilgrimage, calls on Muslims to resist aggression and interference of Western powers. Hamas and Islamic Jihad movements call on the Palestinians to make their way to the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, one day after Israeli forces stormed the holy site. And Iran says the door is still open to a prisoner swap with Britain and the U.S. if London and Washington fulfill their share of obligations. Well, welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has called on all Muslims to resist the West's aggression and wickedness. In a message to Hajj pilgrims, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has described resistance as the key for the Islamic world to make up for the past when they were subject to arrogant powers' interference.
In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Praise be to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon Muhammad, his pure household, his chosen companions, and those who follow them until the Day of Judgment. Dear Muslim brothers and sisters throughout the world, this year too, the Islamic nation has been deprived of the great blessing of Hajj. Thus, eager hearts filled with sadness and sorrow were deprived of the banquet at the honorable house that God, the wise and merciful, built for people. This is the second year that the season of happiness and spiritual exaltation associated with Hajj has turned into a season of separation and regret. The tribulation of the pandemic and perhaps that of the policies dominating over the Holy Kaaba have deprived the eyes of the eager believers from seeing the Islamic nation's symbol of unity, greatness, and spirituality. Thus, this glorious, honorable summit has been covered with clouds and dust. This is another test which, like the other tests that have come to pass in the history of the Islamic nation, that will be followed by a bright future. What is important is that Hajj remains alive in its true home, in the hearts and souls of Muslims, so that now that its physical form is temporarily inaccessible, its exalted message not be diminished. Hajj is an act of worship that is filled with mysteries and secrets. The exquisite formation and combination of movement and quietude in it builds the identity of the Muslims and the Muslim community and displays its beauties for the people of the world. On the one hand, it helps the hearts of God's servants to spiritually ascend by remembering God, reciting supplications, and being humble. And this brings them closer to God. On the other hand, it creates a bond between the Muslim brothers gathering together from the four corners of the world, and this bond manifests itself through their similar garments and harmonious moves. It displays the most important symbol of the Islamic nation, with all its meaningful transcendent rituals, and it shows the determination and greatness of the Islamic nation to all ill-wishers. This year, the Hajj ritual at the Great House of God is not possible, but paying attention to the God of the house, to remembering Him, to humility, to supplicating Him, and to asking Him His forgiveness is possible. Being present in Arafah is not within our reach, but enlightening supplications are. It is not possible to stone Satan in Mina, but rejecting the power-seeking devils is possible everywhere. The harmonious gathering of individuals around the Kaaba is not attainable, but the harmonious gathering of hearts around the illuminating verses of the Holy Quran and holding fast to the rope which God stretches out is a perpetual duty. We who are the followers of Islam and who enjoy a large population, vast lands, countless natural resources and nations that are aware and awake must build the future with our assets and resources. Over the last 150 years, Muslim nations have not had any role in deciding the fate of their countries and their governments. Apart from a few exceptions, they have all been led and governed by transgressing Western governments while being subject to their greed, interference, and malevolence. Scientific backwardness and political dependence in many countries is the product of that passivity and incompetence. Today, our nations, our youth, our scientists, our religious scholars, our civic intellectuals, our politicians, our political parties, and our people must make up for that dishonorable, embarrassing past. They must stand firm and resist the aggression, interference, and wickedness of Western powers. All that the Islamic Republic of Iran is saying that has caused the world of arrogance to become despondent and infuriated is actually an invitation to this kind of resistance. This is a resistance in the face of the interference and evil of America and other transgressing countries, so as to take the fate of the world of Islam in one's hands by relying on Islamic teachings. Naturally, America and its cohorts are sensitive about the word resistance and have decided to show all kinds of hostility to the Islamic resistance front. Some regional governments' cooperation with them is a bitter reality that strengthens those malicious acts as well. The straight path shown to us by the Hajj rituals, by Sa'i, Tawaf, Arafah, Jamarat, and the jubilance and unity in Hajj is to rely on God, to pay attention to the never-fading power of God, to have national self-confidence, to believe in struggle and endeavor for religion, to show firm determination when moving forward, and to have abundant hope for victory. The truth of the realities in the Islamic region bolsters this hope and builds up this determination. From another perspective, the bitter events in the world of Islam, scientific backwardness, political dependence, and economic and social problems direct us towards a great duty and untiring endeavor. Usurped Palestine is calling for our help. Innocent, bloodied Yemen torments every heart. The plight of Afghanistan concerns everyone. The bitter events in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and some other countries, where the interfering, malevolent hand of the U.S. and its cohorts is completely visible, is stimulating the zeal and determination of all the young people. On the other hand, the emergence of the resistance forces throughout this sensitive region, the awakening of nations, and the motivation of the young, enthusiastic generation is making hearts overflow with hope. Palestine is wielding the sword of Quds in all its territories. Quds, Gaza, the West Bank, the 1948 lands, and the Palestinian camps all rose up and bravely defeated the aggressor over the course of just 12 days. Yemen, which has been besieged and alone, has endured 7 years of war, crimes, and the murder of innocent people by the evil, stone-hearted enemy. It has not surrendered despite a lack of food, medicines, and other basic needs. On the contrary, Yemen has perplexed the enemy with its power and ingenuity. In Iraq, the resistance forces are pushing back the occupying U.S. and its puppet, Daesh. With their loud cries, they are eloquently expressing their firm decision to confront every act of interference and malice on the part of the U.S. and its cohorts. The American propaganda effort to distort the will, demands, and actions of the brave youth and forces of the resistance in Syria, Lebanon, and other countries, and to ascribe them to Iran or any other reference point, is an insult to those valiant, vigilant youth. And this stems from America's deep ignorance about regional nations. This ignorance led America to be humiliated in Afghanistan. After that raucous invasion 20 years ago, and after having used weapons and bombs against defenseless people and civilians, it became stuck in a quagmire and eventually withdrew its forces from the country. Of course, the vigilant Afghan nation should remain watchful concerning America's tools for gathering intelligence and its soft war weapons, and it must vigilantly fight them. Regional nations have shown that they are awake and vigilant, and that their path is different from the path of those governments that are even prepared to go as far as to give in to U.S. demands over a vital matter, the Palestinian cause, in order to keep it satisfied. These are governments that overtly and covertly create ties of friendship with the usurping Zionist regime. In other words, they deny the right of the Palestinian nation to their historic land. This is an act of stealing Palestinian assets. They did not find it sufficient to ransack the natural resources of their own countries, and they are now ransacking the resources of the Palestinian nation. Brothers and sisters, our region and the swift, diverse events taking place in it are an exhibition showing us lessons and examples. On the one hand, we can learn the lesson of gaining power using resistance against the transgressing aggressors. And on the other hand, we can learn the lesson of humiliation that results from submitting to them and showing weakness. The true divine promise is assistance for the fighters in the way of God. If you aid the cause of Allah, He will aid you and plant your feet firmly, a verse from the Holy Quran. The primary result of this struggle in the way of God will be to prevent America and other international aggressors from interfering in the affairs of Islamic countries, God willing. I ask God, the Exalted, to assist the Muslim nations. I send greetings to the Imam of Age, may our souls be sacrificed for his sake, and I ask God to elevate the status of the great Imam Khomeini and our illustrious martyrs. Greetings to God's righteous servants. Sayyid Ali Khamenei, July 17, 2021.
Political analyst Sayyid Hosseini says unity among Muslims across the world was a key concept in the message of Iran's leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, to Hajj pilgrims.
...of all nations, where they come to Hajj to have the greatest congregation of the world. His message also has been taken serious by the other nations, as some of them, they are all waiting what he says in his special message to the Muslims of the world. And normally he highlights the issues which all Muslims around the world are involved with, which for the last 40 years always he has been emphasizing on the issue of Palestine, the issue of unity. Recently, after the emerging Daesh or ISIS, he has been always warning the Muslim communities to avoid differences and to become united under one banner.
Palestinians have condemned the storming of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Jerusalem Al-Quds by Israeli forces ahead of a major Muslim feast. The Palestinian Authority has held Israel responsible for the escalation resulting from the incursion in the Muslim place of worship. It has called the move provocative and a serious threat to security and stability of the entire region. Resistance groups, including Hamas and the Islamic Jihad, have urged Palestinians to make their way to the holy site to prevent Israeli raids. On Sunday, Israeli troops beat and forcefully evacuated Muslim worshippers from courtyards at the Al-Aqsa Mosque to clear the way for Jewish visitors. They fired tear gas and rubber bullets and arrested several people. The attack comes as Palestinians are preparing to celebrate Eid al-Adha on Tuesday. We were earlier joined by our Ramallah correspondent Mona Kandil, who gave us the latest updates regarding Israel's incursions into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound ahead of Eid al-Adha.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque and its complex is a Muslim holy site. The Israelis try to tell the world that no, the Jewish has the right to be there, while the word says that it's Israeli settlers raiding the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex, desecrating it, violating all the laws and attacking Palestinians. Here come some of the Israeli officials saying that it's normal for the Israeli settlers to visit the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. They claim it as to be the Temple Mount. The Israeli settlers raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex yesterday to mark the destruction of the first and the second temples. It's a day very important for them. However, Palestinians, of course, would be celebrating the Al-Adha Eid, and this means they will not freely move there because of the strict measures by the Israeli forces and the numerous checkpoints that would be erected around the Al-Aqsa Mosque and in the Old Town of Jerusalem, Al-Quds, to prevent people from going to that holy site.
Yaron says the door is still open to a prisoner swap with the U.S. and the U.K. if Washington and London fulfill their share of obligations under deal with Tehran. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman expressed surprise at Washington's denial of the deal in its attempt to tie the matter to the fate of the 2015 nuclear deal. Saeed Khatibzadeh criticized the U.S. for linking a humanitarian issue with a political affair. He said ensuring the release of Iranians held captive in the U.S. and some European countries under, quote, flimsy pretext is a priority of Iran. The official also said the seventh round of the talks for reviving the nuclear deal will be held by the next Iranian administration. July 19th marks the second anniversary of Iran's seizure of a British-flagged oil tanker in the country's southern waters. At the time, Tehran said that Stena Impero had breached international maritime rules and ignored warnings from Iranian port officials. Canada is reeling from the discovery of a series of unmarked graves at the sites of former boarding schools across the country. Over 1,100 undocumented graves containing the remains of Indigenous children have been unearthed there over the past month. The corruption trial of former South African President Jacob Zuma resumes under tight security in a bid to forestall another wave of deadly unrest over his jailing. Army soldiers and police were stationed outside of the court amid fears of further violent protests following days of relative calm. Zuma has been accused of graft and corruption during his tenure between 2009 and 2018. Earlier this month, the former president was jailed for 15 months for the contempt of court after he defied a constitutional court order to appear before an investigation commission. His imprisonment triggered violent protests, looting, and arson, leaving commercial areas ransacked and at least 200 people dead. The European Union has reacted to a scandal involving an Israeli software firm that has reportedly spied on activists, political leaders, and journalists across the world. European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen called for the verification of the matter, saying that the affair is completely unacceptable if true. She denounced what she called attack on journalists' phones, saying that free press is one of the core values of the EU. Media organizations say that investigations link Israel's NSO group to surveillance of international figures. They say the firm's Pegasus software has been used to hack people's devices, including that of murdered Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The organizations have long warned about the misuse of the software and its threats to privacy and human rights. The NSO denies the allegations. That's all the time we have for this edition of World News. So bye-bye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight. The number of migrants encountered by U.S. border agents edged up last month, pushing the number of total arrests made this fiscal year to more than 1 million. Border agents made 188,829 encounters and apprehensions in the month of June, a 4.5% increase over the previous month, according to data released on Friday, 16th of July, by Customs and Border Protection. The statistics come as Republicans continue to hammer President Joe Biden's administration on border numbers, painting the situation as a crisis and President Joe Biden as incompetent on immigration matters. The article you're about to hear has been written by U.S. News and World Report journalist Claire Hansen. Claire Hansen is a staff writer who covers immigration and gun policy, as well as general news. The piece is titled Border Encounters Edge Up in June, Arrests Top 1 Million for Fiscal Year. The number of migrants encountered by U.S. border agents edged up last month, pushing the number of total arrests made this fiscal year to more than 1 million. Border agents made 188,829 encounters and apprehensions in the month of June, a 4.5% increase over the previous month, according to data released on Friday, 16th of July, by Customs and Border Protection. The statistics come as Republicans continue to hammer the Biden administration on border numbers, painting the situation as a crisis and President Joe Biden as incompetent on immigration matters. The number of encounters, however, is not equal to the number of individual migrants attempting to cross the border with the border between the United States and Mexico, because migrants are crossing the border multiple times. President Biden, to advocates' dismay, has kept in place a Trump-era pandemic border order, allowing authorities to immediately expel single adults and some migrant families from the United States, bypassing typical processes and denying migrants a chance to seek asylum. Some 103,000 migrants were expelled under the order last month. The order has resulted in abnormally high recidivism rates, as migrants who face no penalties for crossing the border illegally attempt to cross multiple times. Customs and Border Protection CBP said on Friday that 34% of migrants encountered in June had attempted to previously cross the border in last year, compared to an average rate of 14% for fiscal years 2014 to 2019. The number of unique individuals encountered in June was 123,828, according to Customs and Border Protection, releasing unique encounter statistics for the first time in what appeared to be an effort to push back against claims made by Republicans that the border situation is the worst in decades. Customs and Border Protection CBP, in a statement, also highlighted that agents have encountered 454,944 unique individuals so far this fiscal year, compared to 489,760 during the same time period in 2019, when former President Donald Trump was in office. Single adults continue to make up the majority of migrants apprehended at the U.S.-Mexico border, though the number dipped slightly last month. The number of families and unaccompanied migrant children crossing the border, meanwhile, rose notably. Meanwhile, Ed Gonzalez, President Joe Biden's nominee to head Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, faced questions from Senate committee members on Thursday, 15th of July, during a confirmation hearing, striking a moderate tone on immigration enforcement that seemed to appeal even to some Republican lawmakers. The American dream relies upon the rule of law and a functioning legal immigration system, Gonzalez said during his opening remarks to the Senate Homeland Security Committee, appearing alongside Robert Santos, Joe Biden's nominee to lead the Census Bureau. If confirmed, Ed Gonzalez will be the first Senate-confirmed leader of the agency since early 2017, and his nomination comes as Joe Biden attempts to move Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, away from its indiscriminate enforcement policies of former President Donald Trump. Immigration and Customs Enforcement was ultimately never led by a confirmed director during the agency's four tumultuous years under the Trump administration, despite Donald Trump's laser focus on immigration. Ed Gonzalez's nomination is expected to pass out of the committee with Democratic votes, but the question remains how much, if any, support he will receive from the Republicans. Gonzalez had decades of law enforcement experience and was elected sheriff of Harris County in Texas in 2016, overseeing a police force and jail system in the third most populous county in the United States, which encompasses the city of Houston. He has been openly critical of the Trump administration's immigration enforcement policies. "We can be firm on crimes, we can be firm on enforcement, but we don't have to lose our compassion and humanity as well," Ed Gonzalez said at one point during the hearing on Thursday, 15th of July. Gonzalez also notably said he was not generally in favor of outsourcing immigration detention to private companies, pointing to allegations of inhumane treatment at some facilities run by third parties.
Economic divide.
The Champlain Connor collapse captured the attention of all Americans. The coverage was immense. After all, there was a possibility, and there still is, that over 100 people may have died. But what is worse is that the warnings were there. Why wasn't there action taken that could have saved lives? What's worse is that this points to a bigger problem, a major U.S. infrastructure crisis. Coming up in today's program, the Florida condo collapse. The signs were there. Cracked columns, crumbling concrete. But management failed to act. Now, does this point to a bigger problem? That's what many are saying the collapse points to, and that is the U.S. infrastructure. Crumbling roads and bridges, schools, water facilities, many at breaking point. How vast is the problem? And finally, U.S. infrastructure. Well, the U.S. President Joe Biden says the U.S. needs to stand up to China and compete with it. Yes, the two are related. He wants to edge out China in education and technology, but what does that have to do with the infrastructure?
Building collapse in Florida. 12 stories. First partially collapse, then detonated to find the missing bodies. 12-story building collapse should not have happened. The warning signs were there, from a 2018 report that cited major structural damage to visible signs from the building. Officials in Florida scrambled for explanations.
The building has literally pancaked. It has gone down, and I mean there's just feet in between stories where there were 10 feet. That is heartbreaking because it doesn't mean to me that we're going to be successful as we would want to be to find people alive.
But this was just a window into a much wider series of problems. The condo building collapse has now raised concerns that there are other buildings that are in danger of destruction. Take this condo building in nearby North Miami Beach. An engineer's report deemed the building unsafe.
I think the building's about to collapse. There's probably many buildings about to collapse. Look at the wall right there. I mean, if you can see that there,
it had to evacuate around 300 people with a 2-hour notice to clear out over safety concerns. And residents are now worried.
For sure, I wouldn't do it. I do not feel securing this building. If this building is not in good conditions, you don't want to stay there. And not after of the situation and the tragedy with the surfside.
The problem is multifaceted. One of them is that buildings that age are not getting inspected in a timely fashion.
There are obviously many questions as to what caused a 12-story condo to collapse. Now that some time has passed and investigations have been made, there have been some very important revelations. One of the startling findings based on video footage is that the building fell in stages and not all at once. This may be the incremental collapse that happened in stages. First, the poolside area may have caved in. Then you have the center of the building, the north in the second phase, and finally, the eastern part. Problems with the condominium were highlighted in a report written by Morabito Consultants back in October 2018, which pointed to a whole host of major problems. Now, this is the report that, with pictures, pointed out the problems that plagued the 12-story condo. The report came with pictures as proof that there were a variety of engineering and construction problems, from balconies to water drainage. Now, even though there were many problems, these were some of the major structural ones that were highlighted, which support the entire building. Weak support columns, cracks in the car park ramps, water damage in concrete slabs that were above the parking level, and cracks in columns and walls. And as if this collapse wasn't bad, it points to a startling reality that Florida, South Florida in particular, could be facing, that it is sinking. Long before the Champlain Towers crashed, the building was actually sinking. Now, an April 2020 study found that the area showed signs of what's called land subsidence, sinking brought on by natural occurrences like hurricanes and worsened by things like groundwater extraction. Okay, joining us for this segment is Ben Carroll from the International Action Center, AIC, short for Information Activism and Resistance to U.S. Militarism, War, and Corporate Greed, links with struggles against racism and oppression within the United States. Ben Carroll, welcome. The Champlain condo collapse, as sad as it may be, had warnings that were not heeded. As I mentioned just now, a 2018 report urged the managers to repair the cracked columns and crumbling concrete. Now, this begs two questions. Why would the owners or management let the structure get to this point of destruction more than 2.5 years after the building managers were actually warned? And why wasn't this fixed before the unfortunate crumbling of the structure, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, first and foremost, you know, this is a horrific tragedy that claimed the lives of, I think, close to 80 people and displaced hundreds of others. But it's really one of many examples that we see every day in the United States of the crimes and the injustice of a system that puts profit over human needs. And in this particular case, you know, the negligence goes all the way up the board. You know, it's like you said, the condo board was warned over 3 years ago that there were major structural problems that needed to be addressed immediately to avoid this kind of a catastrophe. You know, the local government, the state government, and even the federal government, you know, that didn't enforce or have in place, you know, adequate safety measures to ensure that, you know, these private owners of a condo complex like this and, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of similar ones across the country are taking the steps that they need to ensure the safety of the people that live in these buildings. And I think something that's probably the most horrifying about this tragedy is that, you know, how many other buildings like this are there in the United States? You know, over this last year, there's been a housing boom where, you know, there's been homes, apartment buildings, big condominiums, just like the one in Miami, that have been built very quickly all over the country. You know, housing prices are at record highs, and so these builders and these private owners of these kinds of complexes are incentivized to get these things built and occupied as quickly as possible, which no doubt means that they're cutting safety corners, they're cutting, trying to cut their own costs, which is potentially putting the lives of tens, if not hundreds of thousands, or maybe even millions more people across this country at risk.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We do appreciate it, Ben Carroll, with your thoughts there. That's Ben Carroll. Stay tuned. I'm going to be right back with our Info News section. Time now for our Info News section, where we take a look at some of the economic news making headlines from around the world. Well, our first stop is in the U.S. The U.S. President Joe Biden has actually signed into law, finally, an executive order aimed at cracking down on big tech firms and promoting competition. Now, basically, he said capitalism without competition, well, that isn't capitalism, it's exploitation. And the problems to have come out of big tech, these are some of them. Personal information gathering, you have buying up of potential competitors, and competing unfairly with small businesses. That's actually a good topic for our next program. Tell us what you think. Moving on to the Vatican, Holy Vatican, you have a major problem there. There was some news that obviously taints its holy image. A judge indicting 10, including a cardinal, for alleged financial crimes. The Vatican judge ordered 10 people, including an Italian cardinal, to stand trial for alleged crimes. Now, it included embezzlement, money laundering, fraud, extortion, and the abuse of office, as if sex abuse scandals were not enough for the Vatican. Moving on to our next topic, West Asia Daesh alert is now in effect. Poverty and inequality is actually paving the way for these Daesh terrorists to resurge in Syria and in Iraq. Now, the U.S. has issued this warning that Daesh is seeking to exploit dire economic conditions to reconstitute its presence in the region. Well, the question is, isn't the rise of Daesh and economic insecurity a result of U.S. war, occupation, and presence in the region, not to mention the U.S. support for the group? Something to think about. Finally, a hunger reality check in effect here. When it comes to COVID-19 and death, Oxfam has stated that a year and a half since COVID-19, deaths from hunger are actually outpacing the virus. Some of the reasons: ongoing conflict, economic disruptions of the pandemic, and an escalating climate crisis have pushed millions more people into extreme levels of food insecurity. We'll stop for a quick break here on Economic Divide, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Time now for our in-depth section, where we take a deeper look into the topic of this program. Now, this segment we have called the Failure to Act segment, in reference to what if the U.S. does not play catch-up and spend the money or enough money on its infrastructure? Well, the American Society of Civil Engineers actually issues a report with the same name, Failure to Act. And this is what the infographic looks like. We're going to take a look at what happens over the next 20 years. Now, over this time span, the overdue infrastructure bill will cost the average American household $3,300 per year. Now, it states that things like poor roads and airports actually means travel times increase. Now, an aging electric grid and inadequate water distribution makes utilities unreliable. So, problems like these translate into higher costs for businesses to manufacture and to distribute goods and to provide services. Now, these higher costs, in turn, unfortunately, then have to get passed on to guess who? Workers and families, basically Main Street. Now, if the U.S. does not act by the year 2039 on its poor infrastructure, it is forecast to lose a lot of money, $10.3 trillion in GDP from 2020 through 2039. Now, we already have passed 2020. That's nearly half of the annual U.S. GDP in 2019. Also, $2.4 trillion in exports from 2020 through 2039, or more than half of all the profits of Fortune 500 companies that was generated in 2019. And finally, 3 million jobs. That's two times the number of Walmart employees in the U.S. Now, what is worrying is that it's not as if the U.S. has not spent money on its infrastructure throughout the years. Taking a look at this graph, which starts from the year 2007 and goes to the year 2017, you can see that $450 billion for the year 2007 was spent on U.S. infrastructure. It peaked roughly at around $465 billion, with a low at the, in the year 2013 of a little bit below $430 billion. Now, let's see what our guest thinks about this. Joining us for this segment is Norman Stockwell. He is a radio host and political commentator. He's also the publisher of the Progressive magazine, which has the slogan, A Voice for Peace and Social Justice, since the year 1909. Okay, Norman, welcome. Taking a look at the report 2021, it's a report card for America's infrastructure. It found U.S.'s infrastructure earned a cumulative grade of C-. Now, reports prior to that actually got grades of D+ on several occasions, with roads, bridges, water infrastructure, and schools to be near destruction, based on what the report said, and dilapidated after years of negligence. So the natural question is, why is the U.S. infrastructure left alone to its demise when the U.S. is spending excessively in other areas like wars, nuclear bombs, military spending, and assistance, military assistance to places like Israel?
It's been a very serious problem here in the United States for many years that money has not been invested in infrastructure, and we've seen deterioration in the road system, in the bridges. The last time there were large federal expenditures to build up roads and bridges in the United States, I think, was in the 1960s. And since that time, what we've seen is, particularly with Republicans in power, a moving away from supporting infrastructure and also a moving towards the privatization of both services and infrastructure systems. And so instead of having government oversight and government funds going into upkeeping the national infrastructure, what you've seen is things being privatized and therefore money not spent by corporations that really look to the bottom line, that look to save a dollar in every place they can. Now, on top of that, the sentiment of the voters has been towards privatization and towards not spending money on projects like infrastructure because they see it as wasteful. So it's been very difficult here in the United States, and I think this is the hurdle that the new Biden administration is facing as they try to implement infrastructure improvement programs.
Very well. Thank you very much for that, Norman. We're going to bring Norman actually back a little bit later into the program. Okay, in our first report, we covered the Florida building collapse and how it points to two major problems. One was how U.S.'s aging high-rises may also be in danger, requiring major renovation and inspection. Well, the next problem, which is a crisis in many respects, is what we just talked about. That points to America's infrastructure problem.
Some of that work involves building our country's infrastructure. America's roads, bridges, dams, highways, and ports, they're critical to our nation's success.
Trillions of dollars in taxpayers' money. U.S.'s failing infrastructure, a major concern for decades. Each president has come and gone, promising to spend billions and even trillions of dollars on it.
Every president over the past four or five presidents has talked about doing a big infrastructure package. You may recall that President Trump proposed a $2 trillion infrastructure package.
The current U.S. president originally proposed $1.9 trillion, but got half of that.
We had a really good meeting, and to answer your direct question, we have a deal. And I think it's really important. We've all agreed that none of us got what we all that we wanted. I clearly didn't get all I wanted. They gave more than I think maybe they were inclined to give in the first place.
The American Society of Civil Engineers grades U.S.'s infrastructure every 4 years, and the U.S. has barely made it above the D range.
Now, the American Society of Civil Engineers gives America's infrastructure a poor grade. One out of every 5 miles of highway pavement is in bad condition.
We have 16 categories of infrastructure. We put together a pool of experts, about 30 different civil engineers, who are analyzing. A lot of it is data that's available through the federal government. So we're looking at aviation, bridges, roads, transit, dams, levees, schools, parks, solid waste, drinking water, wastewater. So all of these different categories are analyzed. Unfortunately, 12 out of the 16 categories are in the D range, which is poor or at risk, which is really reflecting a lot of our infrastructure being at the end of its useful life.
The problem is time. Roadways and bridges are still in use decades after the end of their lifespans. Sewer and water systems are decaying, and a changing climate has added to the wear and tear.
You've heard and reported that in Miami-Dade County, there's what's called a 40-year recertification for 40-year-old buildings. That only exists in two counties in Florida, Miami-Dade and Broward, which is essentially Fort Lauderdale and its surroundings. Why not a statewide standard? Why 40 years? Perhaps it should be 30 or 20 years or periodically.
We led the world in the middle of the 20th century. We led the world.
The U.S. president, however, is pushing for two infrastructure bills. Beside one on buildings, he also wants to invest in human infrastructure, like in preschool and higher education. His reason? To ensure U.S. global leadership in the face of the rising power from China.
In fact, it's the largest American jobs investment since World War II. It will create millions of jobs, good-paying jobs. It will grow the economy, make us more competitive around the world, promote our national security interests, and put us in a position to win the global competition with China.
He recently said that China is going full bore and has left the U.S. far behind in dollars spent on research and development. He also said a giant infrastructure revamp would send a signal to ourselves and to the world that American democracy can work and deliver for the people.
In 2008, the proposition came out and California voted to have high-speed rail started. We're seeing the product of that. A lot of men and women are coming out here and working on that, and we're finally pushing something out.
It was just a big mess, and it still is. It's unorganized. If we have to call somebody, they're not going to be there right now. They either quit or got fired, or it's just a big unorganized mess, and they know it.
Okay, time now to get both guests in this section to see what their thoughts are on the next question and compare it with each other. Greg Carroll from the International Action Center rejoins us along with Norman Stockwell, who's a radio host and political commentator. All right, first let me start with you, Norman Stockwell. The U.S. President Joe Biden has gotten an agreement with the Republicans for $1.2 trillion out of the $2 trillion that he had requested for the infrastructure spending, building on top of what his predecessor, the former U.S. President Donald Trump, started. But even that amount appears not to be enough. One report said, in addition to grading 17 categories of infrastructure, the report found $2.59 trillion investment gap over 10 years between what the U.S. currently projected to spend and what it must spend to bring systems back to a state of good repair. So where does that leave Biden? Sounds like some hard choices actually need to be made. After all, people's lives and health are at risk here.
Well, I think the Biden administration initially pushed for a very broad infrastructure bill and a significant amount of spending. And the Republicans in Congress have fought back against that, not only in terms of the amount of spending, but in terms of the places that that money would be spent. I think it's very important to note that in the original Biden proposal, the discussion was of having internet access for everyone, being a part of basic infrastructure, having child care support and health care and so on. All of these things that really are part of the infrastructure of a society, even if they're not physical things like bridges or roads. The Republicans have argued for a much more narrow definition of infrastructure to be those specific bricks and mortar items, if you will, like the repair of roads or bridges.
Carol, we'd like to ask you about this 2021 report card that came out from the Engineers for America's Infrastructure, which gave the U.S. a grade of C-. Now, prior to that, a grade of D-plus was issued on several occasions, and you had the same old problems that covered things like roads, bridges, water infrastructure, for example, or even schools that are near destruction. Why do you think the U.S. infrastructure is left to the state that it is, money not being spent on it, administration after administration, when, again, you have things that the money is going to, like military spending, like nuclear weapons, in the trillions of dollars, practically?
Yeah, U.S. is the richest country in the history of the world. And there's no reason why, with infrastructure, you know, things like roads, bridges, buildings, schools, all of this, you know, there's no reason that they should be in the state of disrepair that they are, and that there's tragedies like what happened in Miami and similar, you know, scenes that we're seeing even just this past few weeks all across the country where, you know, in New York City, for example, the subway system there was totally flooded, you know, when there was a flash flood storm that came through. You know, there's wildfires out west, and there's, you know, incredibly historic heat affecting, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people across this country. And it really comes down to the U.S. is much more interested in profit and protecting its interests abroad by pouring hundreds of billions or over $1 trillion into the military, by giving tax breaks to the rich. And, you know, there's many municipalities across the country who will give also these massive handouts to these corporations, you know, on the promise of bringing jobs and things like this. So that they'll build and relocate, you know, their company headquarters or this or that operation to their city. Meanwhile, you know, the wear and tear that takes on the infrastructure in those places is passed off, you know, to working class people. And so, you know, ultimately the U.S. is much more interested in protecting the rich, and their interests abroad than they are about, you know, doing the very meager things that would ensure, you know, a good, secure, and safe life for, you know, the majority of working class people in this country.
The story of the U.S. infrastructure to be in such a sad state, well, it's a sad story. It's basically misappropriating funds, that's right, to areas where American lives are not as important as, let's say, in the area of military spending or wars. I mean, it's quite ironic that the U.S. actually says that the military spending is for national security's sake, to protect American lives. Yet at home, people are losing their lives due to poor infrastructure, from roads to tainted water to bridges to you name it. That does it for this edition of Economic Divide. Your questions and comments are always welcome. From Mikove Tafwe and the entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.